Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. This is an annual tradition. Gather around the fireplace, cozy up with your mugs of hot mulled cider, because we're going to have a regular yearly tradition. We are, of course, talking about having Dave Collum on to talk about his annual year in review, which is the tour de force of all tour de forces. If you want to know what happened in the past year, but you want it without any sugarcoating and straight up, this is the one you got to go for, and we're really honored to be the place that gets to show it first to the world. Dave, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's always my honor. You know, with your audience may or may not know, we go back about 20 years now, probably. So I remember when I first, well, back at the Prudent Bear chapboard, but also I saw first few of your chapters of the your short course, and you were still trying to figure out, why am I doing this? This is like, you know, that baseball movie where he builds a field and they show up, and they did. They showed up. It was fantastic, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it was the stupidest thing ever. Some guy, disembodied voice, a lot of charts on PowerPoint.
I thought it was great.
Terrible idea.
I thought it was stupendous.
Well, it worked out. And I'll tell you what, though. I've recently had this thought that if I tried to launch that today, it wouldn't go anywhere because it might offend a few sensibilities. And of course, we have this culture now, particularly in the social media giants, that A, has fractured and balkanized thought so that you have different camps of people believing their own sets of truths. And the AI has gotten a lot clever about who it's going to show what to. At any rate, when the Crash Course came out in 2008, it was not how it is today. You could throw out an idea and people could organically find it. There's nothing organic about how this is being served and presented anymore. And do you ever question, like, what you're seeing on Twitter is entirely different from maybe what I'm seeing?
Actually. Last year, I focused on that a lot when I wrote about it. If you shuffle a deck of cards, there's an astronomically low, which is a stupid number, put the astronomic number in the denominator, low probability that order of cards has ever been shuffled. And so it's easy to think that we're all looking at the same feeds and the same streams, and Silicon Valley's making sure that's not happening, but also it's just statistically impossible. And so it still shocks me, though, when a colleague of mine who I consider to be very smart can look at what appears to be the same data and draw a completely polar opposite view of what it's telling them. And it's troubling to me.
So every year you write this thing, and I've got to imagine. So here's something. I'm curious if your writing process is the same as mine. So I will sit down, I'll have a general idea. I start to write, and sometimes I freak myself out because it's not till I start doing this that all the sort of the data points. And when you finally put the assemblage in one spot, sometimes I have my own oh shit moment, right? Did you have any of those writing this?
Yes, but you know, at one point we talked about a quarterly report, and the reason that I waved off that quarterly report is I like to have those oh shit moments while I'm still thinking. Mm-hmm. And so I do that when I write papers, scientific papers. A project's not finished till you write the paper. You flat out have to be able to coherently lay out the case on a piece of paper, not on a piece of paper, on a computer screen. And then when it finally fits together with good prose and airtight thinking that you actually now understand potentially. Mm-hmm. I try to sort of get to some epiphanies along the way, and it takes me a calendar year to get there. So the idea of a daily or weekly or monthly blog is just beyond me. It takes me months and months to start to piece together some of these stories. So a dozen months worth of blog in one blog.
In one blog, but that's what it is. It's a book. It's amazing how much stuff comes together. So as we look, I'm looking at the table of contents. Each one of these obviously would be a very complete blog, all post all on its own, and there's more than a dozen there. So as I scan through this, there's so much to choose from, but let me start here because this has been sort of in my wheelhouse and taken over my life a little bit, is trying to do the COVID-19 reporting. Where do you fall on this SARS-CoV-2, the virus, COVID, the disease? I differentiate between those two things and the official response. And if we could, you want to know what's bothering me?
Yes.
I keep seeing these videos out of Wuhan, and people are in water parks, they're in parties, they're in bars, and they're not wearing any face masks. And somehow they got the epicenter, got completely over it. And here we are in the West being dismantled piece by piece by piece because we can't seem to get our arms around it. for reasons that elude me because it's not that hard.
You know why?
Come on, I want to hear why you think it is.
Well, because it's a narrative that's being fed to us. And so the reason you can't get your arms around it is because they keep changing the narrative to make sure you don't get your arms around it. For example, as soon as the death toll started dropping, they started focusing on case counts. That's like the basal level, stupidest level thing.
They changed, I don't know if you noticed. They changed what a case was, don't forget, because a case used to be you required or sought medical attention. Now a case was we swabbed the back of your brain and discovered something.
Yeah, well, that is a headline for me. So then I saw something, for example, like the, I don't know if you noticed this, the Swedish data, they changed the way they reported it. So it goes, the Swedes, they have this big hump early, and they had a high death toll because they took the beating right up front. And I think they probably ventilated a lot of people to death. And so the Swedes were at the tip of the spear and they didn't know how to treat it. But then they were done and it was pretty flat. And then they got the so-called second wave, which you and I both know. We don't even know what a second wave is. We don't know who's dying of COVID. We don't know who's being stuffed in a bag because they got hit by a car. We don't know anything about that. I really trust none of the numbers. But the Swedes had a second wave that was rolling over. And then all of a sudden from this New York Times web feed, the second wave looked huge. It looked huge. I go, what just happened to the second wave? And what they had done was they had gone from reporting daily deaths to twice weekly deaths. What that does, it puts a 3.5-fold amplifier on the y-axis. And they didn't just start when they started collecting differently. They retroactively went back to the start of the second wave. So you can't see that they did that. But anyone who goes to the New York Times Sweden site, you search COVID deaths, up pops the New York Times site. And the second wave looks bigger than the first, but it's because they're higher spikes with spaces in between them. It's total fraud. It is 100% fraud. I've shown it to several of my colleagues. They go, yes, Dave, that is fraud. And so someone committed fraud to make Sweden look bad. You know the geopolitics of Sweden. They opened up. They embarrassed Europe. The Europeans said shut down. They're saying we're doing fine. Finally, they've now made a second wave look big so that they can say, ah, look, the Swedes paid. They were wrong. We were right. Right? That's the story. You know that's the story.
And so why is that, though?
I distinguish COVID deaths. If you're 60 and you weigh 20 pounds overweight and you get COVID and you die, that's a COVID death. Mm-hmm. Maybe you shouldn't have weighed 20 pounds overweight, but you still got felled by that disease. If you're in stage 4 cancer in hospice and you get COVID, that's not a COVID death. You might have had COVID. Something was going to clean your ass out of there within a month or two. Mm-hmm. People getting hit by cars getting called COVID deaths, right? So what out of the 300,000, give me your best guess as to how many you think were legitimate, full-blown, this disease took this guy down and clipped years off their life.
I'm sure you saw the Johns Hopkins report where this poor researcher said, what if I go to the CDC's own website, take their own data, look at all-cause mortality, and it's broken out by groups, and find out what's going on. And they find out, here's all these COVID deaths coming on, but there's a corresponding drop in all these other things, like heart attacks dropped precipitously.
And flu.
And even Alzheimer's. How does Alzheimer deaths drop because of COVID? On and on and on. So it looked like there was some recounting. That's part of that story. But I don't know, 20%?
Yeah, so at one point the CDC got embarrassed when they said that 6% of their deaths were non-comorbid deaths. So at that point in time, that was about 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. So in theory, we shut down the entire nation to save 10,000 full-blown lives. Mm-hmm. Economists actually don't talk about lives. They talk about man years or woman years or people years. And they also talk about quality of life. So big comparison, 95-year-old grandma dies of COVID versus say a 17-year-old teenager commits suicide. Mm-hmm. Which do they count equally? No, certainly not. Certainly not. And yet the suicide was surely the result of COVID. We just lost a kid in chemistry the other day. Now, do I know it was because of COVID? No. But he was isolated and by himself and despondent. And we didn't even know he was in town. We thought he went back to Hong Kong. And so it is estimated by some that the deaths of despair, so to speak, are going to be higher than the COVID deaths. The people who die from various things that have to do with the fact that life just turned on them hard.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I've been reporting since I think my first time where I articulated that it's a three-way balancing act, and if you're doing a good job at it, Obviously, you want to limit the spread of the disease if you can, so that, two, you don't overwhelm your hospitals, but you got to keep the economy up and rolling. And what I've seen is, like, for example, with de Blasio and Cuomo in New York, or with the mayor of LA, shutting down restaurants, shutting down gyms, shutting down small businesses, which is a devastating impact on these people's lives, when they can't even show a meaningful scientific correlation between those establishments and any transmission of COVID that has any relevance whatsoever. It's pretty astonishing.
So, you know, and I know, if you dig into the older literature on flu pandemics,
yeah,
and you look at the influence masks have, you can't find literature that shows that the masks influence the pandemic. Now, people say, oh, how can that be, right? Surgeons wear masks. Well, a pandemic is not a disease. That's something you know, I know. But a pandemic is about how things migrate. There's a migratory aptitude through the population. And when you flatten the curve, there's nothing that says that has to decrease the total number of deaths. You're distributing the deaths over time is what you're doing. And the conclusion that the studies from the pre-politicized COVID era show that they can't find statistically significant advantage to populations wearing masks. And so all it does is it changes. The best analogy I could come up with is if you put stones in a stream, the stone will impede the flow of water, right? Put more, you'll get more impedance. The end of the day, the same amount of water made it downstream.
Buying a little time helped, because, you know, way back in January, I didn't have any clue how to treat this thing. By February, we were starting to get our first readouts, you know. And by March, I think we had a pretty good handle around this. And by April, I was printing out what is pretty close to this stuff. But we're not doing any of that. Still to this day, right to this day, I check right before I got on here. You go to the NIH, they have 100 and some odd page. Here's how you treat COVID. Page one, though, is like outpatient. They're like, yeah, we got nothing. They don't recommend vitamin D. No downside, only upside. They don't recommend, and by the way, tons of data on how it works really well. So anybody listening to this, if you have 17 nanograms per mil or less in your blood and you get this thing, you're going to have a bad run at it. Over 21 nanograms per mil, it's probably not even going to hurt you at all, according to the data we have, right? So that would be like the easiest no-brainer thing. And you got Anthony Fauci not saying word one about this. Except when Jennifer Garner, the star, interviews him for her blog, and he's like, oh yeah, I take it.
But there are two vitamins that you should consider. For example, if you are deficient in vitamin D, mm-hmm. that does have an impact on your susceptibility to infection. So I would not mind recommending, and I do it myself, taking vitamin D supplements.
How do we process that? And by the way, this guy's a hero to a lot of people for his steadfastness. And I'm like, how is this guy not being shamed out of existence for that one blunder alone? And I got others.
He's got a ton of blunders. Fauci's just a politician. That's all he is. He went through five administrations. You say, well, that's impressive. No, it's not. It means that he could change like a chameleon. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. Between Fauci and Gates, there's a narrative out there. You and I both witnessed the profound censorship of a narrative that deviated from the official narrative. Mm-hmm. I hate that. I mean, I found that to be so repugnant. The amount of censorship that went on this year when some New York Post story would come out and announce something and all of a sudden it couldn't be posted on any social media because it didn't follow the narrative. And the head of YouTube, who you've had brushes with now, apparently, comes out and says that we don't post anything about COVID that's not consistent with the World Health Organization.
And by the way, if you wanted to be not inconsistent with the WHO, it's hard because they're inconsistent with themselves, right? Remember?
Yes.
Yeah, masks. Travel, no travel, this, that, not that. And they just recently came out and said, maybe more than 40 cycle time thresholds on PCR does give you false positives. I'm like, oh my God, how did you not know that 6 months ago?
Yeah, right? The answer is 25, right? I even know the number. 25 is a decent number, even though that's being questioned, and 40 is ridiculous. They could get COVID out of a dog's ass at 40 cycles.
Yeah, you can find it anywhere at 40. And by the way, as recently as a week and a half ago, the WHO was recommending 45 as the threshold.
That's ridiculous.
So, well, where do you think we go from here? So 2020, obviously a barn burner of a year for all kinds of craziness out there. And by the way, there's a couple things I didn't see in your list there that I definitely want to ask you about, because they popped up on my radar this year as like odd things. You know what one of them is? UFOs.
Oh, yeah. You know, I kind of figure they're just jerking our chain with the UFOs. So for those who don't, who are new to this, official sources have been releasing UFO footage this year. Who knows why? I talked about this with Antonio Pompliano. The Air Force is releasing UFO footage. I just figure it's to distract us, right? This is bread and circuses.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. Oh my gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. The whole thing, dude. That's not our LNS, though, is it? It's not.
That is the LNS, dude.
Well, if there's like
that thing.
So they got the tic-tac videos out. You got the general from the Israeli general saying, I worked on this stuff for years. They're real.
Former space security chief is raising some eyebrows all around the world this week. He claims there are aliens on Mars and the president knows about them. His claims published in the Jerusalem Post are that astronauts meet with members from the, quote, Galactic Federation below the surface of Mars.
So I'm watching this drip, 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 and it's just, you know, this is the year when you and I, without any tinfoil hats, get to talk about things like UFOs and conspiracies and all this stuff.
Because I'm not doing it, Chris. You're the second me into a UFO debate.
But we're being toyed with in some serious. We're getting trolled. We're absolutely being trolled. So, I mean, it was just something that popped up. And you know, it, many times, you know, when you're trying to dissect the media, which you and I are doing all the time, it's a sin of omission. It's a sin of commission, right? So UFOs, they're committing this, like they're throwing this out there at us. Front page New York Times at one point, right? I mean, it's like, what's like a pretty decent trolling effort. And then there are the things they're not talking about. So I think of all the things to pick on, to me, one of the most blatant things that cracked open more people than I know, the number one thing was the Jeffrey Epstein non-suicide.
Epstein, I thought I was done with. It's clear that Epstein was a Mossad agent. It's clear that Ghislaine Maxwell, who I call Jizz for obvious reasons, is a Mossad agent. It's clear they had a web of powerful people all over the world. And I wrote all about it. And I couldn't piece the whole thing together, but I sure as hell put together enough to say, aha, this is a serious international network of perps. So then Jizz gets caught this year. And that in itself wouldn't generate a story. But then there was that judge who got shot.
Her son, Salas.
Her family, husband and son, meet a FedEx guy at the front door and he blows him away. Son dies, husband seriously hurt. The judge had just taken on a money laundering case from Deutsche Bank. And it turns out that the money laundering case involved Epstein. and then it turns out they said the guy who shot him because he was an anti-feminist. I'm going, oh, come the hell on. Anti-feminists just hate feminists. That's just simple stuff. And then they go to get him and he's killed himself. And you go, oh, that's a bad break. He killed himself. What are the odds? And then you find out that he worked for Kroll Associates, which does MI5, it does KGB, does all the crap, does all the Blackwater stuff. He worked for the Moscow Group. They've had their fingers in everything. And so this guy, by the way, if you're going to shoot someone and then go kill yourself, why bother with a FedEx outfit? Why go with a FedEx outfit problem, right? He didn't know he was going to die that day, but he did.
I have to reject your manuscript for being too unbelievable.
I know. And Kevin Spacey, who's tight with Epstein and Jizz, the picture of him and Jizz on the throne, which made for great jokes about Jizz on the throne. And it turns out that Kevin had been accused by four separate accusers. Kevin Spacey, this has been accused by four separate accusers of molesting them. And they were taking him to court. Three are dead. And one said, no, thanks. I'll let myself out the back door. And so this is the Epstein saga. We're going to keep. And by the way, Epstein, one of Epstein's, Leon Black, I went into, who's Apollo Group founder. He gave Epstein $50 million and can't explain why. And then it turns out that one of Epstein's private bankers decided it was a good year to kill himself. And it just, that story is the underground. Now, here's what I like to say. For you listeners who are listening to this on YouTube, presuming they'll let them put it up, search Tony Podesta art collection. And you go through the graphics, hit images, and you go through the graphics of Tony Podesta's art collection, and you tell me there aren't sick puppies inside that beltway.
Hold on. You're a professor. Where's your trigger warning?
I'm giving it to you. This is not a search you're going to want to do, but you can't resist, can you? This is rubbernecking Tony Podesta art collection.
Yeah. So when you look at all of this stuff, so this is... You know what 2020 has sort of been? I feel like there's a great battle afoot, and it's not good and evil. We could look at it that way. But it's really between those who insist on making sense of things and the people who are insisting that nonsense is the world we have to live in. How is it for you trying to live as a person who connects dots and sees stuff and tries to make sense of stuff? Is that, what kind of a battle are you waging? A winning one or a losing one?
Well, it's also a battle that I keep asking myself, is this a battle I should be fighting? Because it's certainly not making me a happier person, right? If I just watch CNN every day, I'd be a much happier guy, right? I could sit there and hate various people and like other people and everything would be fine and the world would be self-consistent. I have had many, many thoughts about whether I should stop trying to turn over stones and look at what crawls out from underneath them and stuff. It doesn't make me a happier guy. I mean, that's the problem. I've now reached a point where I don't believe anything that if I haven't seen it with my own lying eyes. And, yep. And I've got a few sources, right? I trust you to tell me about various bio things. And that's not to say I think you're always necessarily right, but to say I know you're trying to give me the straight answer. But there's very few people. Markets are a big problem. We haven't even mentioned those yet, but that's the biggest crime syndicate on the planet. And I tried to write, by the way, for those who may or may not want to read the whole damn thing or may just want to take a peek, my section starting with wealth creation through the next one. I can't remember what the next one is. Come on, Dave.
Valuations.
Mm-hmm. Broken markets.
Yep.
That hat trick. I tried to build an airtight case as to why we are, as an investable world, doomed.
In case, everybody's going to, of course, read this, but just in case somebody doesn't. Let's take them through that argument. I want to walk through the markets. You know, I've been calling them markets for people who are only listening to this. I'm putting up two air quotes around it because you can't just have one set of quotes around markets to denote their fiction. Two or maybe five sets of quotes around the word markets. We don't have markets anymore. That's been my view for a while. Take us through your views on that.
Well, so let's take a 60-40 portfolio, right? You're 40% bonds is now priced to return zero nominal yield and negative inflation adjusted. Mm-hmm. Those who think inflation is tame or are certifiably insane or gullible beyond comprehension, check out the Chapwood Index. Inflation's roaring right now. And a lot of people don't believe the inflation numbers now, finally. Yep. So your bond portfolio, the 40% is going to get you nothing over the next 30 years. Your only decision about bonds is how long you want to lose money on those bonds.
20?
Right. You want to lose it for 10, 20, or 30, right? The equity portfolio, I hit valuation hard in 2018. I smacked it with everything I had. And I made the case from 20 metrics, literally 20, that were 2x overvalued historical, which means you're going to get half the return from historical. And since that, the GDP's grown nothing, right? It's actually negative at this point. Mm-hmm. And since that, the markets are up massive, like 35%, some ridiculous quantity from that day. And so the markets are frothy. I put together a graphic that I think nails it, although maybe not, that shows that there's no way to get down from 2x overvalued that's painless. You can drop straight down and lose 50% of your assets, which would, I think, destroy the banking system immediately. If we did a real 50%, you know, Red Bull kind of record-breaking dive, and also we're supposed to shoot through the mean. That just gets you to the mean. And alternatively, you can tread water. Now, if you tread water on an inflation-adjusted basis, you don't make any money on your capital gains, inflation-adjusted. You're going to tread water for 35 years.
Is that a lot?
From this point, for 35 years, waiting for the GDP to catch up to you. You can do some combination of that. You can tread water and drop. So you can drop 16% total. Over 25 years, you can actually go up. You can get a 25% gain over total, 25% total gain over 50 years, but there's no way to regress to the mean without one of some combination. There's just, as I said, you're not Sandra Bullock in the movie Gravity. You're not going to get down from here safely, right? Yeah. And so someone can, some guy can get out at the top. David Tepper can pile drive it down to the basement. I don't care. But collectively, the market is doomed at this altitude. And as I said, I got this from a flight manual or something. The only thing guaranteed is you'll have, you can take the plane higher. I love this. You can take the plane higher if you wish. Mm-hmm. But the only thing you're guaranteed is to have enough gas to get to the crash site.
So, well, wait a minute. Isn't it possible that it's not the market that's doomed, but the dollar?
Well, either way, inflation adjusted, yep, the market's doomed, right? So right now, not only is that a problem, but I don't think the earnings are any good either. I think a dollar's worth of earnings from Exxon is a very, very different than a dollar's worth of earnings from Facebook.
Right.
I don't think most of the tech companies don't produce anything. They really don't produce. Microsoft produces software, kind of. It's not like it's changing, but they sell software. How's that? They're the Walmart of software. The section of wealth creation was one I've been thinking about for years, and then I got inspired to write this year. Robert Gordon wrote a book about 5 years ago that I stumbled upon. It was great, and so I decided to put it all together. And the modern-day silicon-based Goliaths cannot replace the olden-day carbon-based Goliaths for wealth creation. There's just nothing about what they do that represents real wealth creation, real improvement in human life and stuff like that. Facebook is basically an advertising company. And they do it through nefarious tricks. They scrape data. But they're still just trying to sell you a mattress. And therefore, it's a limited market. At some point, advertisers are going to stop spending the money because they're all competing for the same eyeballs. But it's really just billboards and advertisements. That's what Facebook is. And I don't care how devious they are getting the information they need to target the buyer. They're still just advertisements. Amazon is incrementally better than the Sears Roebuck catalog in 1900. The Sears Roebuck catalog in 1900 took people from buying flour out of barrels and nails out of barrels to being able to order something, and some number of weeks later, it showed up. Prefab houses, tools, you name it, tens of thousands of things via the Sears Roebuck catalog. Amazon can now get you that stuff in a day. But that's 120 years later. Excuse me. That's incremental. That's not a big deal.
So the markets, the reason I think that they're bastardized is that a market is supposed to be a place where price discovery happens. So right. You have a buyer, you have a seller. There should be some price discovery. And so
You're so old-fashioned.
I know it's so old-fashioned, but stick with me for a second. And so the central banks have taken price discovery and destroyed it. So money has no value anymore. That's the ultimate pricing mechanism. Either that, or I'm supposed to believe that getting a negative yield on five-year Greek bond is a good idea. Like, I can't make sense of that idea. So
idea if you're the Greeks.
It's a great idea if you're the Greeks, but not for so-called investors. So the whole, if once you take the price discovery mechanism and you reduce the inherent value of information that's located in the price of money itself, I think you're just through the looking glass, and I don't know how to make sense of any of it, you know, personally.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. But it also means during this period of levitation where the average person doesn't quite realize that the sand has moved from underneath their feet. They don't understand why they're losing ground. So the average person doesn't understand why life is just getting harder and harder and harder because they're getting their inflation adjusted raise, which they're told is 1.5%. Meanwhile, the cost of things are actually going up. There was some Fed governor the other day who said, well, you know, people are just sort of, there's a sort of a familiarity bias here where they're looking at just the prices that they see every day. And those are going up, but that's not the real price index. I'm going, that's their price index. Oh, that's the price index for the people who are going to the store every day.
Yeah.
It's just the whole thing is a sandcastle. It's been growing since 81 though. So people say, oh, Dave, you know, oh, Chris, you're full of baloney because when's this supposed to happen? we're in a 40-year bond bull market. Rates have dribbled down for 40 straight years. That has been a tailwind that most people don't understand the importance of it. But it's over. It is over to the point where if the bonds keep going down in yield, we will destroy the system. And maybe we will, but when you have a, when you go from 17% to zero over 40 years, you've got this beautiful tailwind pushing asset prices up and stuff. I did a bunch of analyses of the FANGs, right? The FANGs are the whole market, and they don't earn anything. So here's what Amazon, we'll go back to those guys. Amazon is up 1,000% in something like 8 years. If Amazon gave the entire 1,000% back, the entire 1,000%, they'd have a PE ratio of 15. Right? And yep. If Netflix up 100-fold in something like 12 years,
yep.
Netflix loses money every year to make content. So here's what happens with Netflix. Imagine Netflix gives 100% of that 100-fold gain back. Their shares are now worth 1% of what they were worth, and they still lose money. How do you wrap your brain around that company? So this is the current era we're in. I do not care about walls of money. I do not care about the perception that the feds can elevate it. When you are paying a fortune for no earnings, for no wealth creation, you are not going to win. You can't win.
Yeah, and I try and apply these fundamental things. So it's just a daily barrage of these IPOs, like Snowflake comes out, right? And this is just a database company in essence. There's a lot of them. I can't see the special sauce, but it premieres at a $90 billion valuation and scoots up handily from there, right? They just lose money, and they do something that a lot of people do. So I don't get that story. But the place where I probably get the most pushback, and if not vitriol, is when I dare to say, I don't get this whole Tesla valuation thing, right? Because then people...
Oh, I can't believe anyone buys Tesla. Tesla has something like 0.5% of the sales in the world and half the world's market cap.
Yeah. you probably get the same story. It's like, you're seeing it all wrong. It's a robo taxi company. It's a space company. It's an energy company. You're just valuing it all wrong.
Not.
I'm like... But
it's not. We know it's not.
I know.
It's a battery company. I'll give it a battery company. How's that?
But I'm old enough to remember when we went through all this before, and it was eyeballs and, you know, pets.com and all that other stuff. And then later I had to live through it all over again. I'm like, God, do we have to do this again? Oh, you don't understand. Real estate only goes up, you know, and here we are again. You don't understand it. This is not a car company. It's a something else. They're all just stories. You and I have been there before. Is there a possibility, though, that with the robotization, the algorithmic robotization of our markets, is it possible that the central banks now, because they can't afford a collapse of any kind, will just simply keep doing what they have to do to keep the markets elevated, irrespective of the fact that it becomes socially awkward when the billionaires become trillionaires and hundreds of millions of people are now entering poverty? They don't care about that. That's not on their conscience for some reason. But do you think that they control the markets?
Temporarily. They can't control them forever. Sheila Bair said, and I used to quote from Sheila where she said, capital has to cost something for the free market to work. And so I think they can elevate the market for a while, but they will destroy the system doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I think we could end up where all the trillionaires have everything. And now we're back to a feudal system. And they will decide how much to pay us to scrape out our existence. And that's not going to be a vibrant economy. It's not going to be one. So one of the recurring themes through my discussion is, you know, why does, you know, a king with a kingdom and a bunch of serfs doesn't create wealth. They just attack their neighbors. And I said, they're surrounded by a bunch of wenches. And then you get to the 20th century and you get the robber barons and they created wealth. The good news there. But, you know, when you unleash the billions of people who become a middle class, that's where the wealth creation comes from. And if they are shoved down to serfdom, there's no wealth creation. We would never have pulled out of the Middle Ages had the serfs not been released. And people think it's, oh, we paid them more. That's why. That's not why they did better. That's not why we generated a middle class, because we paid them more. Money is just like a bean counting method. They created more wealth per capita as they came out of the Middle Ages into the Renaissance. And so so if you unleash the billions to create wealth, you will create wealth. If you leave it in the hands of a very small number of people, kingdoms, you don't create wealth.
So is this a story then that the primary understanding of how wealth is actually created, that somebody just lost the plot line on this whole thing? Because right now we have governors and mayors shutting down small and medium-sized enterprises, which you would argue is one of the engines of wealth creation. You have social media giants who are busy reinforcing just whatever that dominant narrative is. And you've got a whole class of people who seem to confuse the currency units, the markers, with the actual wealth itself. Do you think they've just lost the plot line here?
Yeah, I think they've totally lost the plot line. I don't know what the Fed's motivation is. One time someone quoted Greenspan as saying, look, don't think they can't see what you see. So the idea that the Fed is just a bunch of boobs, which is still my fallback position.
Mine too.
But the idea that they're maybe is silly. And so then the question is, well, what is their motivation? I don't believe they're motivated to make trillionaires richer. I do think they're motivated. It's quite possible they see exactly what they see, what we see. And they're just so desperate to find an escape route. They're so desperate to be Sandra Bullock getting down from the space station.
Yeah.
And they're just flailing. And that is probably the most rational model. And so they keep thinking if they can somehow delay the inevitable, that eventually we'll sort of grow our way in. But that's why that plot I made where you say, yeah, we can tread water for 35 years while the GDP catches up to the valuations. And by the way, these valuations, you drop 50% off the market, you're going to destroy every pension fund. You're going to destroy everything. You're going to destroy every municipality, every boomer. We've been down this path for about 8 straight years now. So,
yeah. So on that over under bet that the GDP will grow for 35 years, I'll take the under on that, and we'll get to sort of energy in just a second. But
right.
I got to rewind to some. You said zero yielding bonds destroyed the system. What do you mean by that? Who gets destroyed?
If lending money by purchasing a bond returns negative returns, why would you ever buy that bond? So then what's going to happen is we're going to have to monetize the debt, which then is going to create a massive inflation, which then is going to destroy the system. So all the roads keep leading back to a kind of a Carnot engine problem where you're trying to get something for free that you can't. Mm-hmm. So the only way you become more affluent is by creating more wealth. I know this has been like a repeating theme coming out of my mouth today, but you create wealth and that's how you get more affluent. When the Spaniards got gold from the New World, they didn't create any wealth with that gold. They brought a money back, and there was this Cantillon effect where they had all the gold and everyone else wanted it, but they didn't create wealth by bringing the gold over. They were able to buy wealth with the gold, and then their whole economy went down the tubes when they ran out of the gold. And that's the story of inflationary boom bust cycles like that. And so I have to be able to lend you money in a way that you can borrow at rates that allow you to do something rational with it, and I can be paid an amount that makes it worth lending it to you. And if that negotiation gets broken down, if the haggling between the lender and the borrower gets broken down, which has been destroyed, utterly destroyed by the central banks. There's nothing left of that system. The free market where borrowers and lenders haggle over the price of capital is gone, zeroed out. Now you've got this problem. They made capital free, which means no one needs our savings. No one needs, we scrimp, we save, we put it away, and no one needs it because the Fed will just make more. And so they are a menace to society, no question. They might mean well. They might be scraping along. They might even know we're so far gone that this is the best way to zero it out. This might be the big reset, the great reset that everyone's talking about. Maybe the idea is we got to bring down the banking system in a controlled demolition instead of some sort of uncontrolled demolition. I don't know what their plan is.
We've all known the math doesn't work out. I mean, everybody's known this, right? You run the basic math on any pension system, you're like, that math doesn't work, right? United States even I remember such quaint numbers. I'm sure I haven't checked them out in years. Kotlikoff back in 2008 was telling me that the unfunded liabilities on a net present value basis, meaning that's the amount of money you would have to have in a bank account earning interest in order not to, to get to zero in this balance, we were at minus 200 trillion.
Yeah. So the Kotlikoff estimate of unfunded liabilities, which means IOUs that we as taxpayers owe, it's about 2 million per taxpayer.
Per taxpayer. Good luck with that.
Per taxpayer, yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to... So we know we have these math problems. So there has to be a great reset. The easy way is you get a lot of inflation and all this net, but the way the Fed is pushing money into the markets, they're only guaranteeing that that only ends up in the hands of the wealthy, right?
I'm back to the idiot model. You just dragged me back there.
I know. We go back and forth. So if they think they're helping, they have 10 solid years of saying they're only making stuff worse. So they are the proverbial fireman pouring gas on the fire. So that's pretty idiotic. I don't think they're that dumb.
So the other thing that seems to be missed by many is that there's no evidence whatsoever that if you regress to the mean, let's call it regress to the mean, through it, whatever you want to do, but regress to the mean with inflation, then it's any more painless than regressing to the mean through deflation. So but if anyone who lived through the 70s, lives got destroyed by that inflation. And that didn't even cleanse the whole system. That just took out some of the excess. So if we have to purge the excess with inflation, it's not like it's being done under anesthetic. Mm-hmm. We're purging out grotesque excess, whether it's inflation or it's just a different path to the same destination.
Mm-hmm. Deflation really hits the concentrated wealth, though, because that's all the people who hold the assets that are going to be, you know, that's unpopular because most of those are, you know, political donors.
I want deflation.
Right. Inflation hits everybody. So that's why I think the Federal Reserve is trying very hard to be, I call them the reverse Robin Hood organization. They want to steal from the many. And they think they're going to sort of get through this by stealing from the many, which is stealing purchasing power from every single bank account and saving and paycheck out there. That's great, except what they're also doing is they're handing most of that purchasing power to the few.
Other thing is you can't tax deflation. You can tax inflation. If I make 10% inflation based on just inflation, so let's say Chapwood Index says inflation's been running about 10% in the 50 biggest cities. Mm-hmm. And you go, how can that be? Well, try living in one. And so it's been running 10%, might be dropping now, right? Wouldn't shock me if all of a sudden Chapwood took a dive. But if it's rising 10%, if inflation's really at 10, that means every year everything goes up in value 10%. There's taxation all over that money. So they tax some 30% of that 10%. They get about a 3% vig out of that. If we have a deflation, there is no infrastructure to tax something that becomes more valuable by virtue of the fact that deflation is in play and that the price of your thing hasn't changed down too much. So if you own a house that's going down in value, they can't tax that. If you have equities going down in value, they can't put capital gains on those. So deflation is an untaxable event.
Unless we get that old, I think it was tried in Italy once around World War II as a demurrage system, which
right.
Dings any money you have saved, it sort of dings it on a schedule.
That's the Great Reset.
That's possibly it. So I saw you tweet something recently, and it was very cryptic, and you said you've finally gotten bullish on equities. And hold on a second. I'll tell you. So this whole idea that we're going to grow for 35 years, I'm taking the under on that bet, and here's why.
I didn't say equities.
Okay. Hold on. What did you say?
Specific ones.
Okay, specific ones. Great.
So I'm aware of the risk, and that is I've decided to buy. Now, for the record, I bought, let me think, it's about 2% of my net worth.
Okay. Big spender, you.
Of which half of it's cash. So this isn't exactly me shooting out like Elon Musk on a rocket ship here. But I have been convinced that taking a small and possibly methodical position in energy and materials is a smart thing to do. Because the energy...
I thought that was the case. That's why I'm going here.
Yeah. I'm not buying the fangs.
I figured not, otherwise we have to rewind and start this whole thing over.
Just cancel me.
So here's the thing, as a biologist, I mean, maybe it's just the science training. I'm sure you get this as well as I do, which is that without energy, you've got nothing, There's just nothing in this story. All the rest is just noise on top of the idea that you have excess surplus energy, right?
Right.
So I keep looking at this and I'm going, what is wrong with my worldview? Because we have all these people saying, oh, we're just going to live without oil. We've hit peak demand. People just don't need that stuff, you know, and I can't find the case for that that's really rooted in anything I would call numbers. Second of all, the overall percentage weighting on a capital basis of energy companies in the S&P just tagged an all-time low at around 2%, right? It's like, how is it possible? What's that?
That's why I bought them.
So why? How is it possible that in a sane world, you say the number one industry that's responsible for all the rest of them
is energy.
It's only worth 2% of your capital allocation. I'm like, that's dumb. What do you think?
Right. Well, it's going to be worth more. but I also, the problem is that if we have a hard sell, they will get taken down too. And so there's this little voice in my head. One voice, one shoulder is John Hussman saying, beware, all 10 deciles will drop. So when the PE gets to 7, there's half the stocks are below 7. I don't think it's going to get there soon. And on the other shoulder, I got Jesse Felder saying energy's never been cheaper. Mm-hmm. And so I finally said, okay, I've got to take, this is like the hodlers want me to take Bitcoin. I'm not going there. You guys get rich, have a ball. But I decided I would start pushing in energy. I actually do have some equities in an account I don't micromanage at all. And they've done a great job and they don't get beaten up in this downturns. And so I just let them do it. So I've got some equity exposure, but not much. So in any event, you're right about the energy. How I would ever question you on the use of energy in society would be an outlandish concept. I've hit this pretty hard this year. And I went through we came out of the caves with fire. We came into the Bronze Age with charcoal, right? And I went through the various things. And I said, through the whale oils, right? The druid priests and the peat bogs. And I got to the present. I said, oh, now, of course, we're going to hit nukes. And I said, no, we're not. Because the climate change guys don't want us going near nukes for some reason. They just want us to not use energy for some reason. They think solar panels are going to do it. And I just blow double snot bubbles when I hear them say that. And so we are on the cusp of potentially going to the next energy that could potentially drag us forward, admittedly from a problematic period of time. And we're going to bypass that. And we're going to go to incredibly inefficient sources of energy, which destabilize grids and do all sorts of problems. And maybe in the end, we'll come out a better place. But, and by the way, the other thing I don't do is I don't confuse climate changers with environmentalists. They are a very different breed of person. And sure. So you environmentalists out there, I'm on your team. I believe environmental problems are real. And I believe resource consumption is real and a real problem. I just don't buy climate. And so we're going to pass on the one energy that was the next move up, and we're going to do it. And there's in the United States, do you know how many deaths from nukes in the U.S.? I couldn't even find them. Who's died from nukes in the U.S.?
It's zero, pretty much. For all practical purposes, it's zero.
Yeah, yeah. The only deaths are from Chernobyl, but I can Chernobyl and a couple in Fukushima. We're going to pass on that one. Meanwhile, we can end up with some total starvation mode because we passed on that one. And yeah,
I'm sure you've seen it. Like there's all these people, you know, erstwhile groups out there saying, oh, we can decarbonize 50% by 2030.
Yeah, and I'm thinking,
we could, but you got to tell me which half of the population you want to call.
Right? Yeah, I know. Let's start with the young guys. By the way, a great story out there by a woman named Joe Nova. And she talks about what Australia did to its grid. So Australia legislatively mandated going green. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem with legislatively doing it, California. And their grid, they dumped all their coal-fired power plants, which, by the way, Australia is the biggest provider of coal in the world. So you're going, oh, man, really? And then they went green. And it turns out their entire grid is supposedly a disaster now. Their grid goes down. They have blackouts. They can't control it.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes people ask me, you know, what's your greatest objection to solar? And I say, nighttime, you know.
But even you in theory can come up with a way to store it. You and I both know how hard that is.
I know. And I'm a huge fan. I you know, it doesn't mean I don't have it myself and all of that other stuff. But this whole idea that you know, Nate Hagans put it best, and he said, they're not renewables, they're rebuildables. And so that's my whole problem with these things is if you look at how a wind tower goes up, I just, here's my, ready, 8-word summary of watching the installation of a tower. Diesel, 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 fossil fuel fed workers. Those are the only inputs, right? And so if you show me, and I think this would be a worthwhile experiment to run. Remember we did the biosphere and we took a bunch of people, put them under a dome in Arizona.
Last that worked real well until they suffocated, right?
Yeah, that didn't last all that long until they were like gasping for air. And so that didn't work. I would love to see a medium-sized city put in all the upfront investment you want. You get all the wind towers you want, all the solar panels, but you have to replace them based on their own energy. Go. I'd like to see that experiment run, see where we get.
No chance. You know, someday we may end up there, right? I give the physicists the highest probability of saving our bacon. What a lot of people don't understand also is that these solar panels are toxic waste dumps. Mm. So we've got, how many million solar panels are there in the world? What, 400 million? I don't know what the number is. There's got to be a truly enormous number of solar panels. They're all filled with toxic crap. And so even the Chinese say we don't know how to recycle them. If they can't recycle something, no one can.
Yep.
So what are we going to do with all these solar panels when within our lifetime they're all going to be going belly up, and we have to rebuild them, as you said? Mm-hmm. The answer is I don't know. I think that we've got to learn how to get energy cheaply. And I also talked to a nuke guy who said, and this is from one source, so don't hold me to it, who said that the second gen nuke plants can basically use the energy right down to cold, right down to you don't even have to find a way to dispose of it, that they can take the tailings of a mine and use it.
Cool. So I would be a big fan of those. If somebody said, hey, would you be a fan of having one of these small decentralized pebble bed reactors installed in your community? I'd say, hell yeah, I would love that.
Yes.
I would totally raise my hand right up and say, yep, I'll take
that. You bet.
No chance. The only reason we put the boiling water reactors in, which is the Three Mile Island, which is Fukushima, that can melt down, is because you get plutonium, bomb-grade plutonium out of them. It was a bad decision, and I understand how it was made at the time, but we don't have to make the same decision. I think we got plenty of nukes. So maybe we could get other nuclear energy going. I would be a huge fan, but we're not doing it.
And it's going to take decades to do it. That's the other problem. It'll take so long to re-educate the populace, to get through the legislation, to get it going. I've heard there's a couple of nuke plants being made. You probably know about them in the United States. I've heard it's kind of off radar construction almost. But it's going to take us decades to get to the point where the populace loses their phobia of nuclear power.
So I'm looking at oil is, to me, if anybody wants to understand, you know, where's the world economy really, I'm like, well, just look at oil consumption. It's very simple. If oil consumption is down 20%, there's not a chance in the world that the economy is only down 6%. Not a chance.
How is the economic damage being covered up? Because first of all, we know the unemployment numbers are fictional, and they're way more fictional than they used to be. So when they say 6% unemployment, you got to be kidding me, right? But how we're in the eye of a hurricane, in my opinion. We are in this quiet period where you look all around, you go, those are ominous clouds on both sides. And that's exactly right. Why is it so quiet? We came out of our basement. Why is it quiet? There's no way that we're not going to hit commercial mortgage-backed security defaults. There's no way there's not going to be a cascading failure. How is it somehow being presented? Maybe it's just the narrative. We're back to the narrative. It's being presented to us as everything's under control. And the average person's in the home going, my life sucks. Why is everyone else doing fine? Right? Maybe that's it. People are not aware of how many millions upon millions are screwed in this. It just seems like they've papered it over. I guess $6 trillion buys you a lot of wallpaper, I guess.
Well, it does. And if you look at one of my favorite charts, which scares me, and I hope it impresses other people, is you look at current government expenditures hoovering right around $10 trillion on an annual basis for the last two quarters. In income, it's just $2 trillion. And they're trying to convince me that our deficit's around $1 trillion. I'm like, nope, can't be true. Not a chance. Not even
the other thing, it also means the GDP numbers are wrong because GDP does not account for inflation. It doesn't accurately account for inflation.
Right. And, but without that government expenditure, I think, you know, that's at least in part holding this up. I mean, there's no right. way you're going to have two quarters of annualized $10 trillion government expenditure when normal would be normal. Is it four? There's no way that doesn't, you know, really boost us.
Yeah, but it's, as you and I both know, it didn't create any wealth. It just created money.
Yeah, it did that. So, but this is all just like, I can't for the life of me. So I still think that here's the big story that I think is coming up in 2021. When I look at the Chinese import numbers for oil, it's kind of off the charts. And they're just going as if nothing's happening. Meanwhile, everybody I know in the shale business says, yeah, this kind of sucked. You know, we not only do we lose a lot of frac crews, not only do we, you know, cold stack a bunch of rigs, but they had to do some hard shutdowns on some wells. That wasn't good for the wells. There's all these abandoned wells, blah, blah, blah. We're not getting back to the same level of oil production output that the United States had in 2018, which was the near-term peak. I just don't see any way that we don't run into an oil crisis at some point because of the absolute destruction, capital destruction of that industry worldwide, which has been astonishing. Take a look at the stock prices for Transocean or for Rig, right? Just destroyed, right? These are companies involved in deep water drilling. Look at all of them. So I can't see a way that we can fashion a story that says Netflix, Zoom, Google, and Facebook are somehow going to, you know, create wealth for us because they don't create a single thing for us. Energy creates something. I just can't make a story that makes sense here to me around any of this.
Well, so there, you kind of brushed over what could be an investable opportunity in that there have got to be industries that when that crunch occurs, they will be in huge demand. So oil service companies and things like that. And we can keep talking about that later in life here. I had a conversation with David Einhorn, who is great at shorting. I'm not sure he's any better than the average bloke at buying long positions. He's brilliant at finding fraud. That's his forte, in my opinion. But he thinks his assertion, and I would respect your opinion more, is that the natural gas world has been so wrung out now that they could be sort of bottoming. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because a big portion of the natural gas story was what's called associated gas. And there's a lot less of that coming out of the ground right now. Right. So it's associated gas with the shale oil wells that are not being drilled right now. So I think there's actually a pretty big crunch coming there. It's interesting when you drill into something like the Marcellus or the Barnett and it's just a pure gas play. Those wells actually have really, they don't collapse in the same way that you get from an oil well. They have a much longer tail, a longer life, but it's more like 10 years to 12 years rather than just two or three before you're pretty well cratered out. So the extent to which we've got a lot less drilling in the oil space means we have a lot of fast burn oil gas, associated gas that's like off the market right now. And I don't think it's coming back anytime soon. And by the way, I don't think we're going to get big upticks in drilling until we get to like 100 a barrel at this stage. I just don't know how we could. So that to me is the next big shock. You know, it was Jim Puplava years ago said oil is the new Fed funds rate. So when the price of money is zero, right, what's your new effective rate of interest? Well, it has to be something real like oil, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And so I also worry about, you know, this idea of nibbling on hard asset-based equity plays with dividends that have been beaten to the ground. Mm-hmm. The dividends are at risk, right? Some of them are actually borrowing money to pay dividends. And so in 2009 was a big washout of dividend producers. So if you somehow think that dip is going to save you because you own dividends, dream on. The most amazing thing is they replaced Pfizer, which looks like a pretty secure 4% dividend, with Salesforce.com into the Dow. And I had to Google Salesforce.com to figure out what they do. And then when I Googled it, what I found is the one thing they don't do is make any money. And they lay off workers. I learned that too. And so they just brought in one of the sketchiest imaginable companies into the Dow to replace Pfizer, which in theory just saved the world, although the vaccine story is getting a little out of control now too.
Can I switch topics real quick?
And yes.
I have to ask you about the cancel culture. So
this was
a big year for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. So to make a long story short, I when the guy got knocked over in Buffalo, I put out a tweet that said the guy shouldn't have been doing that. He shouldn't have been poking at the cops. Mm-hmm. Had to give him space.
Yep.
He was feeble. And then I said something like he was self-inflicted. I think the cancel culture was locked and loaded and waiting for me because things happened so quickly that it did not look grassroots to me. Mm-hmm. There were 5,000 signatures to get me fired, and there was all sorts of stuff like that. They dredged up a smear campaign from 3 years ago when I went up against the American Federation of Teachers, and I beat them. I really beat them. I was able to beat them. They were going to win, and I took them out at the kneecap with one swift bat with the Louisville Slugger. And then they smeared me. They did a cancellation, but it was a one shot, and it was ugly, but it had no lasting effect. So they dredged that crap up again. And next thing I know, I'm sitting there on my deck, you know, talking to, you know, several different trustees, trying to brainstorm what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. I finally concluded from some information snuck to me through back channels that they even knew they couldn't touch me. And so that helped a little bit, but it was an ugly scenario. It was actually an unpleasant experience.
I'm sure it was. I'm sorry for it. Who's they?
The social justice crazies. I don't give them warrior status because that's way too glamorous sounding. So the alt-left, these are the ones who think now that they're not just liberal, they're vicious. I have no trouble with liberals. Liberals are fine, right? They're utopian, but they're fine. The social justice crowd are vicious. They're mean bastards. And they don't want you to repent. They don't want you to learn. They want to take you down. And if you have some status, which I as former chair and stuff, I had some status on campus, you're a trophy. You're big game.
That's pretty damning there. So I will read that section. And of course, read the whole year in review because it's just amazing.
I got canceled for the wrong reason.
Without ascribing cause and maybe intent to this, what we're seeing here looks, this is what I would imagine. This is what I always thought it was going to feel like. It's confusing. Nobody seems to know what's happening. It's happening faster than most people can process it. I think that this I'm going to make a bold prediction that trend is going to continue into 2021. What do you think?
My delusion was the same delusion as those who watched some of the first battles in the Civil War, where they sat up on a knoll and they were all dressed up like a Sunday dinner or something, and they thought they're going to watch this glorious battle and it would all be over, right? And
yeah.
I had this delusion that I would be able to watch it from up on a safe knoll above it all. And it's now very clear to me that this social unrest, which is going to get worse, not better, that it's going to be hard for anyone to stay above the fray. It's going to be very hard because, for one thing, that the social unrest finally figured out going to the suburbs scares the bejesus out of people.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be looking to get to the suburbs because they know it's one thing to rock the cities because everyone just leaves the city or leaves, they're in the high rises or whatever. You head out into the gated communities, you get more attention. And so I think that's going to be a problem going forward.
So we haven't really talked about it yet, but so the Great Reset, Klaus, all those people,
Economic
Forum, Davos, are they just...
Right.
Will they just have some fantasy, you know, control power trip thing? Or do you think they're actually onto something? And by the way, to set this up, one of their talking points that they put out in 2016, 17, 18, all that stuff, it's out there, is Build Back Better. Imagine my surprise when I go to the Harris-Biden transition website, and it doesn't say harrisbidentransition.gov. Their website is buildbackbetter.gov.
Where's that come from?
That comes from the Davos. That's the Great Reset.
That's a Davos term?
That's a Davos term.
And if you're committed to doing what we should all be doing, which is to help people build back better with
stronger and build back better.
Hopefully we can just work on what we say, building back better.
We have a chance to build back better.
An opportunity to build back better.
To say we're going to build it back better.
To helping the Arab region build back better.
We will build back better from the COVID crisis.
We can build back better. And I'm looking forward to getting started as soon as we can.
I didn't know. That's evil stuff. Oh my God. I thought it was just some guy with a really bad sense of cadence. Build back better. And I thought it was just a stupid person came up with that. I didn't realize it was in Europe. So do you have any idea what the Great Reset is? What's your best guess? Because I don't have a good guess. I just know they're trying to prep us for something.
Yeah. So at face value, I think I'm ideologically aligned along one dimension, which is I think if you take it at face value, they say, wow, looks like the world doesn't have enough resources to continue as is, which is true.
Right.
So we're going to have to make some adjustments. Where we depart ways is I would just then choose to be honest with people because I believe in people. And so this is a great divide. People on the left really don't trust people. Right. And I get hit with this all the time. Chris, if you say that, other people will do terrible things. I won't. But they don't trust other people. I trust people. I say, give people the best information, let them make do with it what they will, right? And some of them will do dumb stuff, but they'll learn from it, right? That's life.
Right.
So that's fine. But at any rate, I think that if you take them at face value, they're saying the world's running out of resources, but instead of telling people that, they're going to lie about it. And they've been very gleeful about using COVID-19 as this great emergency, which is allowing us to really advance some agenda. So it's sort of Naomi Klein's disaster capitalism just comes home, you know, instead
this time,
get to feel what it's like to be El Salvador. Yay, you know, but really they're using this as an exciting opportunity to advance a lot of very, very strong agendas. But they all boil down to this: command, control, loss of privacy and private rights. Even private property rights for humans, they get to preserve all of that. So one of their big slogans is, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? Well, if I don't own anything, who does, right? Is this just straight communism? But then they say, oh, you'll rent everything. Well, that there's two sides to the rent coin. There's the dude who owns the thing I'm renting and me, the renter. So it you can just feel their, to me, what I think they're doing, if I take it at face value, is they realize the world's running out of resources and they want to make sure that those resources remain in the right hands, which are theirs. And the rest of us are going to have to get used to living smaller lives. But you can't do that in an economy and financial system that's exponentially based on continued growth without something really breaking. So I think they're trying to manage that process and get us used to things like having even a low-level mayor say, we allow movie tents, but not outdoor dining tents, like all this capricious sort of...
Compliance yeah. is sort of the drumbeat.
Yeah. And so I think that's what we're being set up for. It was kind of like you and I and everybody listening to this knew that taking our belts off and getting our privates millimeter wave scanned at the airport had nothing to do with safety, right? In terms of actual numbers and statistics. But it had a lot to do with compliance and getting us used to that sort of an arrangement. So to me, this is just a continuation of that storyline, which I get. Here's the truth to people. I would say there's not enough stuff for 3 billion Chinese and Indian people to come up into middle class. We just can't make that many washing machines. There isn't enough gasoline to power that many cars. So we're going to have to come up with some other model here. And we don't know how to do it on a country by country basis. So we kind of need a world government because it doesn't work.
Do you think, for example, that the U.S., which is kind of right now trying to retain a catbird seat, you think the U.S. is signing off, or you think this is a Eurocentric thing where they're kind of sandbagging us to achieve this? Do you think the elites in the U.S. are signing off for this too?
Well, let's imagine you're part of these elites and you scan around for a world system where you say, who's got reasonable command and control, who can actually do this in a top-down way where you use AI and programs and invasive things in order to contain and control a population to achieve your aims? Who's number one at that right now, would you think?
China.
Yep. That's what I would think.
Well, we're certainly imitating them. The other funny thing is, you know, when this virus first broke out and the videos were coming out of China, they were both horrifying and at some level kind of not believable. So you'd see someone getting stuffed in the back of a van ostensibly because they were sick, and you're going, they're putting up a pretty good fight for being sick. Mm-hmm. Right, they're really resisting that one. You see people getting welded in their apartments. You're going, did you really have to weld them in an apartment? What's that about? And guys being dog walked, chain gang together, walked down the street. And I go, who are all these, you know, stories of crematoria? The whole thing, they were talking about disinfecting stacks of dollar bills. Can you imagine a stack of one this tall, you know, a foot tall, and spritzing it with bleach? What the heck is that going to do? And so, yeah, the whole thing looked hyperbolic. And the next thing I know is that we're panicking and they're opening up. And so the question is, do you think we got rickrolled by these guys? Do you think they suck? I think they knew they could trigger us into a total panic and then pop right open and go, hey, guess who runs the world now? And by the way, guess who's not babbling about trade wars anymore, right? We are lucky they opened up. If they had been as bad off as we thought, we'd be starving all over the world right now.
Without antibiotics and other
products. Not anything. The average car has something like 30,000 parts in it. There's just, they were all coming out of Wuhan a place. If they hadn't opened up, we'd be toast.
But they're not just opened up. They have people in water parks and the bars are open and nobody's wearing masks. And
I think we got rickrolled by the Chinese on this one, but maybe we got rickrolled by some global elite who said, let's use the Chinese. Okay, tell you what, here's your cue. You know, it's the Gates Foundation. If you talk about Bill Gates for a minute, if you want, I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. The Chinese might have just looked like, I thought they were covering up a banking crisis was what my first response was. I thought, okay, we got to have a virus because the banking crisis, the banks are going down and we can't blame ourselves, of course. So we got to have a reason for the banks to go down. But then that didn't seem to take place. Next thing I know, our system's seizing up like crazy. And so there was some theater in there that I never did understand.
I'm pretty sure I got sucked in on it. You know, I'm watching all these videos come out, right? And then there was just a day where no more videos came out. And that just showed me, okay, China only lets out what they want. I was really surprised at how fast it turned off. I mean, I remember the day was right. I think it was probably February 17th. Or it was right around there. All of a sudden, I couldn't get anything. Nothing, right? There was nothing coming out. But before then, people tipping over in the streets, giant trucks with fog coming out, you know.
Right, exactly. But it was stupid. You don't disinfect a street with a fogging truck. My God, what kind of stupid logic is that? And so I couldn't figure out who the audience for that propaganda was. And it seems to me more probable it was for us than its own people. You know why? Because they don't need propaganda for their own people. They just say, don't do it, and they don't do it.
Yeah.
So then the question becomes, oh my God, there's so many questions here.
All right, so against that backdrop, let's talk about Bill Gates. What's he up to?
My view of Gates is that I think he could pass a lie detector test and say that he believes what he's doing is for the good of humanity. I think he could pass that lie detector test. I also think it's quite possible that he's taken his obsessive compulsive personality and ruthlessness that he used to create Microsoft and is directing it towards this goal. So ironically, I found, and you'll see it in my year in review, I found a quote from 2011 year in review where I mentioned that Gates and Buffett had pooled their gargantuan resources. And I said, let's hope they use these resources for good. And it was clear at the time that I was really worried about the consolidation of power. It wasn't about Gates per se. It was about the consolidation of power. My image, I think, was that when Gates is gone, who's going to run? What happens if a $200 billion not-for-profit decides they're going to go into eugenics? Who's going to stop them? Right? You bribe anyone you want with that kind of money. No one can stop you at $200 billion. So I think Gates is obsessive compulsive. I think the vaccine thing he believes in, I think the evidence that the vaccination programs he's been involved in around the world have been spotty at best. Mm-hmm. And I think that he owns Fauci, for example. I think Fauci's completely a Gates mole. When I watch him get interviewed on the pandemic, he just looks like he's lying. I read a book on how to spot liars, and he was like 10 for 10. And so the question is, who is he? Well, I think he's the engineer in the bridge over the River Kwai where he built the bridge, and he became so obsessive about his bridge that he didn't want to destroy it at the end, even though it was the thing to do. Now, when I was digging through the clinical trial to try to understand why they kept showing up negative and I didn't believe it, you realize Gates funds the entire global virology community. He has control of the whole virology vaccination community. He has money to, he gives money to companies who generate the products. He gives money to the media who talks about the products. The Gates Foundation has an unbelievable reach, and I started running into a lot of people who in prominent positions were saying, this guy's powerful and is controlling the narrative. It wasn't just me and you. It wasn't just a couple of whack jobs hiding in the basement here. There's some serious guys out there saying Gates is controlling the whole narrative.
And to what end, do you think?
I think it's an obsession. I don't think it's a control of the world. It could fit into the Great Reset. It could somehow be in that story. I get this feeling it's just Gates got this bug up his ass. And he's just so convinced that vaccines are more. I got a tweet that someone passed to me from 2019 saying, I think 2020 is going to be the year where vaccination will be the greatest investment. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, really? You said that in 2019? What were you thinking, Bill? Mm-hmm. So I can't rule out the possibility the whole pandemic was engineered to bring in the vaccine, to bring in the, I can't rule any of that out. The probabilities I put on those kind of theories are very low, but they're not zero.
Well, we know we can guarantee this, that regardless of whether or not this was released, engineered, lab, natural, or any of that, people have been waiting for a pandemic to come out because they've had a bunch of programs that they've been just dying to sort of trot out and try, right? So,
right.
So you always know there's a pandemic coming. There's another swine flu. There's another H1N1. There's another something, right?
This would be like if I had been predicting a horrible bear market, except I had the power to create it.
Which would be, how does Charlie Munger put it? You show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. I know how that story turns out.
Exactly.
So, huh. Well,
how do you move forward though? This is the dilemma I have is that we're stuck in this dark tunnel at some level. We're looking at the world. It's the Matrix, right? We took the wrong pill.
Yep.
We got a great view of everything and social media, despite all its frailties, is certainly a flood of links and clicks. And, you know, I just saw the other day, by the way, and I bet a lot of people don't know this, that straight off the CDC website, 3% of the vaccinations are leading to not able to do daily responsibility, requiring health care, a bunch of things. They were missing a Boolean operator. They didn't say or and. So I don't know whether it's any one of the following or all of them, but 3%. Now, I got to tell you, that's a pretty high percentage for a virus which is not getting, there's a lot of asymptomatic cases. I'm not sure I wouldn't rather try my own personal herd immunity with this thing than take that 3% chance.
Yep.
I don't know if we know if people are dying from this thing. I just, the narrative, it's a constant narrative and they're suppressing it. And you have to screen grab everything now.
Oh, I know I do. I certainly do. I'll tell you something you're going to want to screen grab that just came up today. I saw it actually last night, late at night, but this morning is when it hit my wires, which is that the IMF has come up with a working paper, a white paper that says that maybe people's social credit scores ought to be based on their web browser histories.
You and I are toast.
So this is just a reminder to scrub your web browser.
That was the IMF. The IMF, is that supposed to be talking about social credit scores? That's supposed to be.
I don't think they are. I don't think that's
insane, right?
Not really in their wheelhouse. I don't know that's up to them.
That's like when the central bankers start talking about fixing climate change.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah. I really want Lyle Brainard, who's probably going to be something else at some point. But, you know, she's talking about how we have to get ready and central bankers have to fix climate change. Now, if you happen to be listening, you disagree with me, that's fine. What I can tell you is that even if climate change is roaring along, it's still incremental. It's still going to take years and years for this to take place. There's nothing in climate change for central bankers. They don't work on that frequency. Mm-hmm. And so the question I will ask your listeners who still buy the climate change model, which, by the way, there are a lot of Nobel Prize winners saying it's bogus. So don't believe the story about how no one with a half a brain doesn't believe climate change, because there are some world's famous, history's most famous physicists are saying this is baloney. They're lying to you. And that's the first lie you get, is that there's no one with a common sense who doesn't believe it. But even if it's real, the question I ask you, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Give me the what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And usually the answer to that.
Crop failures.
What's that?
Crop failures.
Well, except the crops will move.
Well, that's a long process. It's going to
take. Well, but climate change is a long process too, right?
Well, no, I mean, if just suddenly for whatever reason rains decide not to fall in an area.
Well, where yeah, but still, it's incremental. If you look at the temperature changes, you look at the various changes in what sea level and stuff like that. It's still incremental. Mm-hmm. Even if it's as bad as they say, it's still incremental. It's not going to be an overnight thing. Nothing you can see with the naked eye is climate change. You think you can you do the math on it. You can't, even if it's roaring, you can't see it. You can see, you can say maybe, yeah, when I was a little kid, maybe a 50-year window, but you can't say, oh, there's more hurricanes. None of those claims are valid. They're absolutely not valid. But so the question is, you can have crop failures, but we also have time to head up towards Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. towards places that used to not be very good for wheat that might be great for wheat now. And so we have people say, well, you know, like such and such will be flooded. I said, how many of the houses along the East Coast were here 100 years ago? And none of them. They 100 years ago, those houses all got washed away. We depreciate them along the coast constantly. So as the coast moves around, we will build differently. We will refurb. We will do things. You know, I say, oh, what about New York City? Something like that. I go, you know, the Dutch are living underwater, for Christ's sakes. We got the technology to control that.
But let me just take it. So the direction that's always made sense to me is this. I'm still a big believer in this idea of peak oil because it's real.
Totally.
And because, you know, fields deplete and all of that. Well,
so we don't have the energy to do this is what you're about to say.
No, what I'm about to say is if you knew that, if they have access to the same information we do, and they do, and if they're smart, and they are, and you know that this is real, that peak oil is real, and you know that we're at 7.8, heading to 9 billion people no matter what we do, because that's baked in the demographic cake.
Right.
And you know that we kind of sort of peak and run out, like, you know, not run out, but you run out of the ability to grow more, and you've got a whole system that's dependent on more, 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 more. Right. What do you do?
Well, we're going to solve the population crisis the hard way. We will have, but that's not about climate, but that is certainly about overpopulation, right? So for example, Rwanda, the slaughtering in Rwanda is said to be a tribal battle, but the people have looked at it and said, no, their problem was they didn't have enough calories per acre, period.
Yeah, period. 0.04 hectares.
Flat out didn't have enough to survive, so they started hacking each other up because that's what humans do.
It's the oldest story in the book. It's the Viking thing. So my question is my observation is this. I've always wondered if something like a climate change, like a Great Reset, pick a narrative, but you right. need a narrative to sell to people the idea we're going to have to start doing things differently. We don't know how to tell you that we've been lying to you about how great growth is for all of these years. And we don't know how to tell you that everything you hope, live, dream, and thought was true is actually false. So we need a story, you know. Is it possible that this is a story that we tell ourselves?
So that's absolutely possible. Now, in fact, when the central bankers are talking about climate change, you know they're lying, right? You know they're lying. There's not a snowball's chance in hell. That's in the central banker's manual. Mm-hmm. And so then the question is, what are they doing and what do they know? And are they just covering their asses or is there some, you know, if you can really get an overview of the world and you got smart guys and maybe they're saying we've got to change the way we work, as you say. But so maybe they're trying to soften the target, right? Soften our opinions, our expectations. I don't think they're good enough to pull it off.
Maybe not. So this gets back to, like, you asked, what do you do? This is the only thing I've been able to figure out. This is what I've been telling people for 10 years is basically a version of John Michael Greer's collapse now and avoid the rush, right? It's like, you're going to live a smaller life, right? But that's fine. It can be an even better life, right? We live in communities again. We don't have this vision that we take trips all over the world all the time. And maybe more people learn how to garden and be in relationship with each other. And we build soil. And I'm actually okay. I actually think there's a better life to be had than the consumer culture. I mean, inarguably, by the numbers, when you look at how many people were obese, unhappy, dissatisfied, had jobs of bullshit quality, according to David Graeber, no meaning, no purpose. Can we do better? The answer is, of course we can do better. I think there's an opportunity to do better in this whole thing. I just don't believe it's in the, we have to track everything down to the nanofiber and put, you know, barcodes on everybody and all of that. I think there's another path through this, but it begins with people saying, on my own terms, I'm going to decide to live the kind of life I want to live. And if that involves, you know, traveling by train once a year instead of all over the world at any time I want by plane, that's okay. We can adjust. We'll adjust.
I totally agree with that. By the way, one of the things we learned, now, there were people who during the sheltering suffered badly, no question, especially the ones who didn't know if they were going to eat. They did not, right? There's a lot of people. The only guys who were guaranteed jobs were the ones who were calling the shots. But one of the things you learn is that what you need is a roof over your head, food, some health care, and Wi-Fi. and we lived a much more austere and sort of old-fashioned existence. My son and his main squeeze spent the about 4 months with us. Mm-hmm. They brought their two dogs. By the time we were done, we had six dogs in the house. we bought a Boston Terrier puppy after seeing what their Boston Terriers were like. So life was really good. Uh-huh. And Graeber's right. And I asked a rhetorical question on Twitter that I morphed a little, cleaned up a little bit for the year in review. But it was the question, if your job and your salary can be simply replaced by a government paycheck, what were you doing that was so important? And what I can tell you is the garbage man gets a big check mark out of me for doing important stuff. And the guy at the grocery store does. But the guy at the movie theater doesn't. I don't need to go to the movies. I don't need to. There's a lot of stuff I didn't need during that period. And by the way, you know, Netflix, you can watch what any of 10,000 things. By the way, you can only watch one at a time. Mm-hmm. So Netflix is just a TV set. It's just a TV station. Happens to have a lot of choices, but we all know that you eventually run out of shit you think you want to watch anyways. Mm-hmm. And so, I think a humble existence. I think, you know, you drive around during the shutdown, you see couples walking together with their dog, walking together. Oh my God, right? There's probably going to be a baby boomlet amongst the youngsters who still can get it up and stuff like that. So you're absolutely right. We could live like you and Jim Kunstler have been saying for several decades. It's just dial it back. My brother, when I was in high school, he's an econ major, and I was still in high school, he made some reference to the economy growing every year. I said, well, it can't grow every year. I knew enough math. I'd already got an exponential somewhere along the way. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, it's not healthy if it's not growing. I go, it can't grow forever. Right, I understood the law of the exponential Albert Bartlett level, right? Somehow that always stuck with this. I mean, you can't just keep growing exponentially. You grow knowledge exponentially, right? But you can't consume resources exponentially. You're a drop of water in the middle of the infield of the stadium, right? You thought I forgot all that crap. I didn't. That all, and the fact that, you know, 3 minutes before that stadium's flooded, you know, you can barely see the flood coming tells you that the exponential function, when it blows up, it blows your ass up royally.
Yes, it does. Right. It just seems so obvious. I mean, that's obvious. And so because it's that obvious, it's literally to a well-educated society, it's elementary education level math. They get it.
Common core math now.
Yeah. So if they get it, here's been my position on the whole Great Reset thing. If you've watched Rules for Rulers, if you watched that, one of the best little mini 19 minutes, it describes why dictatorships and what we call a democracy run by the same exact rules, which is there's a treasury and people and keys to power, and you take out the bad people and you get the same bad people. Here's why, right? So it explains sort of the architecture of this larger thing. So I'm convinced that you're at the top of this hierarchical pyramid of elites, and you go, listen, even if we get removed, they'll just be replaced through some period and loss of time with another set of people who are kind of like us. So let's just pretend we're in power and we have to do something. And by the way, we're at that part of the history where doing nothing is a choice. It's the same as standing at the bottom of an avalanche and going, I'm not going to run. That's a choice. So is running. They're both choices. So we're at this weird part of human history where we go, we can see the end of the resource curve. What do we do about it? I got to be honest. I would choose to be honest with people, and I would say, here's kind of where we are. I know it's a little disappointing. I know we were telling you otherwise for a long time, but we're going to have to live kind of lives of less, but they can mean more, and here's how, right? They're not doing that. That's fine. But I actually think that's the story right now.
Well, the other thing that's true is people always say, why does Bill Gates need more money, or why does he need the vaccine, or why does Bezos need more money, and why did King Henry the whatever need more land? And the answer is always dopamine or serotonin. And so what I can tell you is, no matter how rich and powerful you are, you need neurotransmitters. And the way you get them, some people get them, you know, through porn, some get them by laughing, some get them through power. The guys in power need dopamine every bit as much as the guy at the grocery store. Mm. And so if you somehow wonder why Bezos needs to keep growing, just ask what would happen if he stopped getting those inputs. What would light him up? If you're worth $100 billion, I'm probably underestimating it. What would light you up?
I could find 1,000 things right off the top of my head that I think would be worthy of doing. Like all these kids out there trying, no capital, but they're erstwhile. They're trying to figure out how to farm and build soil up with permaculture. You know how far $1 million would go to some of these people? Well, you could do that 1,000 times and you'd give away 1 billion of your 100 billion, but with growth in your stock, you probably could do that for infinity, right?
Yeah, you know? If you wanted to have an effect on Africa, send over well drilling equipment, right?
Yeah.
I just send over well drilling equipment and let them travel Africa drilling wells into the ground so that these guys can get water. Of course, that then the population soars and then they get a big famine, so...
Yeah, but you know, that big famine may come to a theater near you before you know it. Who knows, right?
By the way, I was prepping before everyone else this time too. I was a prepper from 20 years ago, but as soon as they locked down Wuhan, mm-hmm. I head off to the store like crazy. I said, No. There's no number of rolls of toilet paper that are enough now.
Yep. I'm proud of myself. On January 23rd, I sent out an alert to my subscribers. And I only mentioned 3 things that people should focus on and get right away. N95 masks and toilet paper was number 2 on my list, right?
Right.
You know, way before it became a meme for the year. And it's not because people rush out and buy toilet paper. It's that when people have to stay home, our whole product cycle and our whole delivery and our whole manufacturing system is geared that people are spending about taking half their dumps not at home, right? So there's a whole toilet paper industry that puts big rolls in airports.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that subtlety. I just knew that I wanted it bad. And I knew that, you know, and I'd go to the store and again, no one's responding yet. And I'd walk past a 50-pound bag of rice for like $20. And I go, I have to buy that.
That's the best $20 I'm going to spend.
I have to buy that. I can't not buy that because even if I don't need it, someone will.
Yeah.
And again, back to the idea that if China hadn't opened up, if they did what we did, we'd be starving. So yeah. China saved our bacon by opening up. I think it was part of some masterful trade deal.
China is playing the long game in all of this. And I'm not sure we even have a game. Our game seems to be petty corruption. You know what I think most people would be disappointed by, as I have been, is just how small and pathetic the amounts are that buy people off in this culture.
Holy shit. They sell their souls for nothing. Of course, now they're getting huge amounts. But back then they weren't, before the Citizens United thing and stuff like that.
I know, but they're kind of pathetic. So like, you know, you look at the stranglehold that certain industries have. Like I think pharma industries had just an enormous stranglehold on a lot of the COVID stuff. And you look at it like, wow, you know, but they you know, they donate $13 million to Russia.
God, these are like hookers outside the Lincoln Tunnel. I mean, this is just not this. I know.
You add it up, and you're like, the ROI on that, you know, investment's like 1,000,000%. It's just astonishing. So it is. It's that tawdry, and I am worried that there's a game running, and that this is just sort of late stage empire sort of stuff. You know, when graft and corruption are the rule of the day, here you are. You know?
It has to be, actually. But again, I'm having trouble personally thinking about how I move forward, because I'm looking at the dark side so much. I go, dude, you got to make sure you don't lose the joy in it all. And I would say this year this year kind of tipped me over the edge, realizing that before I was kind of chuckling along, right? You and I go, okay, this is going to get ugly, but you know, it was just theoretical. Now it feels very real and feels painful to watch. There's a Roman proverb that says the vanquished weep, but the victors do not laugh. And what it means is that when we're finally shown to be right, there's going to be no joy in it. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no, I told you so. I won't mind telling the Tesla owners that they just blew it. I might cackle at a few of the Tesla bulls on Twitter, you know, but no, when the real pain is on, when the real regression to the mean via the Great Reset combo platter shows up, there's going to be no satisfaction in having been right.
Yeah. So,
I'm having trouble figuring out how to go forward. I talked to my brother. I go, Ned, should we just stop talking about this? Should we just stop thinking about it? And then the question is, how do I progress forward? And it's like watching a car accident or something where your eyes are stuck to it. And I'm trying to figure out what the best way to go forward is.
Yeah. I think this whole period has raised a lot of existential issues, especially for the people who've been, I agree with your summary, which is, I was sort of like, you know, poking and prodding and seeing if I could shame the Federal Reserve into being slightly different through tweets. You know, what a tilt at windmill sort of effort that's been over the years.
Right.
You know, but it was all sort of, it always had a little underspirit of fun. It's not fun anymore.
That's right.
It's deadly serious.
So then the question is, how do you have fun despite that?
Well, I don't know if I have any brilliant, bright ideas, but my response to all of this is working on building community here, and we're building up the soil, and we're literally building stuff because it's a little bit of a sort of a lifeboat arc sort of a story, which is, I don't know what the future holds, but I'm very good at trend predicting. So I'm just one of those guys, like if you drop a hammer, it's going to go down. Right. You know, that's the extent of my prediction. So, you know, I'm pretty convinced that censorship is going to get more extreme going forward, and that's going to make my life a lot less fun, right? You know, because I'm very bad at self-censoring. I just chafe at the whole idea, right? I just as soon like raise cows than throw out stuff that's going to get banned, you know. I'm pretty sure that this energy thing is going to bite us in the ass at some point in my kid's lifetime, maybe not mine, but soon, you know, ish, relative on a human scale. So we're going to need responses to that. So literally I'm just like, how do you have joy and beauty and things of meaning and purpose? And you're like, so control what you can, leave the rest, right? I can't, this whole people are just nuts right now. And I can't.
Well, it's the leaving the rest, which is a challenge, right? It's not the finding things that I like. It's the leaving the rest.
Yeah.
Because there's this addictive quality of going, holy cow, they're going to do what now? Right. So the big reset, right? The great reset. It's hard to say, I don't care what it is. I don't care if I understand it. I do care. I have this urge to find out what the hell the great reset is.
Yeah. I would completely agree with that. And the more you analyze it, it's like the theme you've sort of been helping people along with here, and myself included, is anything you want, any story you think is true, if you dig at it, you're going to discover that maybe you didn't get the whole story, or maybe it was spun a little bit, or maybe it's completely upside down from how it's been presented.
Or maybe it's way worse.
Or maybe it's way worse, right?
And that's exactly Woody Allen's quote about, you know, we one path leads to despair, the other to total destruction. Let's hope we choose correctly.
I got to call an audible on this. I could keep talking to you forever, but this has been a fantastic, fantastic interview, and I got a lot out of it. And don't worry, we may trim out the part about UFOs, but
I don't care. I didn't bite, so there's nothing. There's nothing you can get me on.
They are there. Okay, I tried. I'd see if I could lure you into. But they were
announcing them. I can't deny that.
So, and who knows what that's all about. Hey, in the time we've been talking, you'll be happy to know they frog marched the Dow from a minus 400 back into the green, just on a ruler.
Really?
Just on a ruler.
Great edge, side angle, side. Yeah, frozen rope.
Just march it right up. Make sure, I call it the Leave No Billionaire Behind program. The LNBB is the hashtag.
They banged silver down 7% from 1 to 4 in the morning last night.
Yeah, they did. So anyway, markets, lots of air quotes around those things, because that's the world we live in. It's a simulacra, but it's going to continue. So, hey, thanks for your time today. Thanks for the year in review. Everybody, read the year in review, because anything we talked about is like 10 times better in the year in review. So direct you back to that. So Dave Collum, thanks for doing it. Thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you.